Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, October 20th. I'm Ray Graff. It's birds today, and we are bringing you the most famous bird watcher we could find. Rich Guthrie will be on the line to answer your birding questions. He's smart. He's affable. He's engaging. He sings. He does bird calls like nobody. He's the Placido Domingo of the bird singing world. If you have a question about birds, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. It's always a popular show when Rich Guthrie is on to talk birds. Get your calls in early, 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Birds today, Rich Guthrie is here. Your questions coming up. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We're talking birds today. And when we do that, we always welcome back our favorite avian expert, Rich Guthrie. Rich is retired from the New York State DEC. He's a board member of the State Ornithological Association and the regional reviewer for the premier birding site, eBird. You got a bird question? Call now, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Again, the number is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie, welcome back, sir.
Hey, welcome back, huh? All right, glad to be here.
Hey, man, not to put too much pressure on you today, but right before the show started, my producer said, try to make the show something better than terrible today. And I said, you're setting the bar pretty high. But
we'll do our best.
With Rich Guthrie here, I think I got a shot. Hey, I was outside, I think it was Friday, midday, out in the parking lot here at the station, and I saw two very large birds riding thermals. And they kind of drifted across Albany, and they went sort of over me and kept going. And they were silvery white underneath. And I looked it up, and to me, they looked like Northern Harriers. Is that even a possibility?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And now, right in the middle of the right time for them.
Yeah.
They're getting out of town.
That's a pretty impressive bird.
Yeah. The Northern Harrier is one of our hawks. It gets its name from its habit of harrying. I don't know what came first, and I don't know the verb. But they're out there in the open fields, flying back and forth and back and forth, low over the grasses. They got long legs that they reach down and grab that meadow vole.
Yeah.
They have incredible, it's a parallel with owls, except they're the daytime counterpart.
You know, it's so funny, because at first I said, okay, these are owls. And then I realized, no, these are not owls.
Okay. That's very reasonable, because they have a facial outline very similar to an owl, where they have the ability to focus on hearing.
Yeah.
And they listen for the little scurrying of critters invisible through the grass or under the snow, and bingo, next meal.
Pretty cool. And they're moving through the area and will not be here all winter, presumably, right?
Well, some of them will stick around through the winter, and that's one of our target species, one of our interest species in our winter raptor surveys that we at the Green Land Trust will be conducting through the winter, and they do over at the Washington County grasslands as well, and down at the Schwangunk National Wildlife Refuge down in Ulster County, and elsewhere, anywhere where there's large open fields. In Schwangunk, for example, it's an abandoned airport. In Washington County, it's open farmlands that the harriers like. And in Greene County, It was fallow farm fields that the meadow voles flourish in, and the hawks and owls come down for lunch.
Now, that's interesting. There can't be a great deal for a Northern Harrier to enjoy in downtown Albany, though, right?
No.
So they were just moving through.
Yeah, Albany was kind of in the way.
All right, a couple of emails here, Rich, and then we will take a break and hit the phones. The number, if you have a question for Rich Guthrie, is 800-348-2551. We've been getting emails for a couple of hours now. That's how vastly popular you are. This one's from Jim in Glenmont. Jim says, my backyard is a stormwater drainage easement followed by a large open field. All the trees are 100 to 200 yards away. During the spring and summer, we get a lot of birds, red-winged blackbirds, swallows, ducks, geese, herons, etc. Now and until spring, there are very few birds. I'm considering putting up a feeder for the winter, but wonder if it's worthwhile if there are few birds and if there's no place for the birds to roost or find protection near where I would put the feeder. So should I try to feed them? And what tips, you know, type of seed, artificial roosting spots, etc., would you suggest to maximize my success? And that is from Jim in Glenmont.
Well, yeah, great question. And it's by all means, absolutely. Put out a menu for the birds through the winter. Those open fields, while they may look like they're pretty empty, you put food out, there will be birds there. And we could start out with a simple ground apply food like cracked corn. You put cracked corn out there, and there are field birds like open field birds, surprisingly enough, will come right to crack corn if you got the habitat and the food out there for them. Hornlocks, snow buntings, long spurs, they do like crack corn. Once they find it, they'll love you for it. And then you could also put out a shepherd's hook feeder with a pole with a bird feeder on it and fill that with food, and the birds will come in. Later on, or you could start now with, as you suggested, some little enhancements, temporary enhancements for the winter. The discarded Christmas trees later on will make perfect hiding places for the birds that do come in and want to find a temporary shelter for the time being. Or, you know, down around here, every now and then you'll go by some of these warehouse places and they'll have free pallets available. You can maybe construct a little A-frame just for the winter. What I use is a couple of sawhorses, and I found somebody had discarded a door. So I put a door on top of a couple of sawhorses, and I've got a platform feeder and a little something underneath where it will remain open even in the snow.
Oh, terrific. This one came in from Rich in Holland Patent, in the wetlands near Holland Patent, says Rich, or Richard. Richard writes, ducks, geese, egrets, and herons have long necks. The ducks and geese fly with their necks extended, the egrets and herons with their necks folded back. How come? Is there any explanation for this anatomical, aerodynamic difference in their flight? Is there even a rational question or further evidence of my mental deterioration due to the pandemic? A damaged mind would like to know, and that is from Richard in Holland Patent.
Just a matter of course. Not all birds with long necks fold the neck back.
Yeah.
And not all ducks stretch the neck out. So it's more or less family and species related.
Yeah.
The herons and egrets, they do most of the time tuck their neck back in. I suppose it's, you know, just kind of like comfort. You know, sort of like walking with your hands in your pockets. Why not? Just fold your neck back and fly. The cranes, on the other hand, will fly with the neck stretched out. And storks and ibises, the same thing. So, you know, it could go either way, and it's all, you know, family affair.
All right, this email came in from Emily in Plainfield. And Emily says, I tried to get this in on the last show, but I was too late. So here you go, Emily. Emily writes, I saw a large bird of prey flying along the Westfield River by Route 9 in Western Mass. And it seemed too large to be a hawk, didn't have the coloration of an osprey. It reminded me of the one or two times I have seen a bald eagle, but it was a mottled brown and gray and white on its back. Didn't look like the picture of an immature bald eagle in my Peterson guide, which is more uniformly brown on its back. Any guesses? And that's from Emily in Plainfield.
Yep, I'm going to guess that it was yet another variation of the immature bald eagle. The field guides can't capture all the possibilities. And through their growth, the young bald eagles go through, and it's a lot of individual variation as well. They go through a series of molts that will include more or less some white feathers here and there. And sometimes in a predictable pattern, sometimes not quite so. But eventually, it'll turn that dark brown, black, and white head.
All right.
After about 4.5, 5 years.
All right, this is from Gina. We have two more emails. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll go to the phones. 800-348-2551 if you have a question for Rich Guthrie. This one is from Gina in Hurley, New York. Gina writes, we had a great sighting about 2 or 3 weeks ago. There was a flock of northern flickers, around a dozen, foraging around in our yard, most likely having insects for dinner. It's my guess anyway. Were they responsible for the large soft spots I found in the yard afterwards, or had where they had been? If so, it's okay with me because it was a fun sighting. This event was a first, and can I expect them again next year? And that's from Gina in Hurley.
Well, good for you. It sounds to me like you have a organic pesticide-free setting out there, which is really important for our ground-feeding, insect-eating birds. The flicker is one of those friends of ours. It's a woodpecker, actually, that has come out of the tree and feeds on the ground. Mm-hmm. Their favorite foods are grubs and ants and the like. So good for you. And as with regard to the soft spots, you may have some other helpers out there. Moles and voles and shrews and mice might also be helping out. So, but all part of the fun and games of a happy environment.
All right, last email, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll go to the phones. This one's from Mike in Saratoga. Mike says, "I have a question about putting out Niger thistle seeds in fall and winter. Seems like the goldfinches are only around in the summer, and that no other birds are interested in the Niger seeds in winter. Should I take them in for the winter, put them back out in early spring?"
Heck no.
No.
No, right now, good question, because right now we're having what looks like it's going to be a banner year of the winter finches, the little guys, the siskins and red poles, as well as goldfinches from elsewhere. And, they'll just love that Niger feed.
Okay.
Now, the thing about that Niger seed or thistle seed is that, and I gather this to be true because I've had it happen to me, is that it becomes unpalatable, less attractive with time. It doesn't have a good shelf life. So part of the problem may be that you've got some stale, you're putting out stale bread for them and stale food.
So get out some new stuff.
Get the new stuff and keep it going, because once the siskins and red poles come in, they'll keep you happy through the winter.
All right, let's take a quick break. Rich Guthrie is here, and we will get to your phone calls in a moment. 800-348-2551. Yeah, remember Mannix there, Rich Guthrie, Mike Connors running around, jumping over things, driving his car, and catching bad guys. Remember that show, Rich? You don't remember Mannix. You don't remember?
I sure do.
Well, that was the theme right there.
Okay.
Doesn't it bring you back?
That part I forgot.
Let's just cancel the whole. Let's go to the phones. Lynn in Saratoga. Lynn, you're on.
Hey, Rich. I just moved to Saratoga in February, townhouse. And all I've noticed in the backyard, I have mostly pine trees, is cardinals, blue jays, some little sparrows. One morning this week, first time ever, there were three or four what I think are woodpeckers, maybe a little smaller than the size of my fist, little red spot on their head, and they were losing their mind. They were slamming into my sliding glass door, but they were clinging to it, scaling it, and pecking on my door and my window frame, and they wouldn't go away.
Nice. And more than one, you say?
There were three or four of them, and when we walked up to the windows, they would fly and they would cling to the metal balusters of the deck. They never sat on the deck or the railing. They wanted to be that, you know, that vertical pole.
It does sound like woodpeckers to me. It's unusual that it sounds like a young group of young woodpeckers fresh out of the nest or thereabouts, and they probably not anything specific to your window. I think they're just hanging around at that point, and they're curious little youngsters tapping away at what they don't understand, and that is the glass in their reflection. So it's not something I'd be too concerned about. It I've seen that happen, but not on a window or window frame, but on a porch railing and the like, where they follow each other around, sort of like just a troop of kids. And I'm going to say
they're like juvenile delinquents.
happy little playground kids. Just, just having fun. And the likelihood is that they'll just sort of go back to where they belong and play in the woods where they're supposed to. I wouldn't worry about it, but if you have a chance, you might put a suet feeder out there and welcome them back.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Thanks, Lynn. 800-348-2551. The number. Rich Guthrie is here. We talk birds today on the program. And Heidi is in New Paltz. Hello, Heidi.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
Hi. I have a question. My adult son rescued a house sparrow that has kind of a deformed leg, so he's unable to really perch. So he rescued it in June, and he's been just basically feeding it seeds. It seems to be doing really well, although it can't be released because he or she can't fly.
Mm-hmm.
He can, like, flutter, and he's definitely almost like a pet parakeet because he's really attached to my son and his girlfriend. So we're wondering, he's very curious about if he's properly feeding the bird. Does it need gravel? And also, I guess my question would be, is our house sparrow a protected species that he shouldn't really have it in the house?
Good question. Rich?
Well, good for you and good for your son. Now, the house sparrow is not what they call protected. You can keep it in captivity. That relates to the house sparrow only. The other sparrows out there are under the federal umbrella of protection. So, but not this guy. And, they make a delightful little companion. I would, you know, being as it will not do well on its own outdoors, sure, maintain it, have a And as far as food is concerned, a house sparrow is pretty omnivorous. They'll take almost anything, from breadcrumbs to bird seed. You can get ordinary bird food at the feed store or pet supply place, and a little bit of water and now and then, and you know, keep them around. I know other people who have kept house sparrows, and. And in your case, this is a rescue bird that probably would not survive on the outside. So good for you. I'd say carry on. Do a good job.
Heidi, thank you very much for the call. It's Birds Today on Vox Pop. Rich Guthrie is our guest. 800-348-2551. The number at Mora in Saratoga. Mora, you're on.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I've been desperate to have some guidance about this bird situation we had a couple of weeks ago.
Okay.
My husband saw what he thought was a little duck running away from him, and he was worried it had an injured wing, but at the time he was rushing out of the house, so he didn't investigate. And when I got home, he told me about it. We didn't investigate. We live in a rural area, could have been anywhere by that point. And 2 days later, I was weeding, and I found the most beautiful, unfortunately deceased bird. I thought it had the coloring of a hawk, but it was like a little chicken. It was so beautiful. It hadn't been dead long. I took some photographs. A friend who is in bird groups sent it to her people, and I was told that it was a northern bobwhite.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Bob White's from being a little girl on Cape Cod and listening to their beautiful song. One of my favorite books is That Quail Robert, about a real-life quail on the Cape.
That's
the most magical book.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. So yes. I was just completely devastated, and I don't get it.
Well, Bob White is related. Actually, it's a chicken-like bird. It's related to the quail, the pheasant, the grouse, the turkey, and the chicken. But they don't do well this far north. They're more of a southern bird species. And
I understand, but why was it here in Saratoga? So crazy.
Well, because, yeah, people, you can get bobwhite eggs, you can buy bobwhite chicks and raise them yourself. And it's quite often used by let's say young group organizations where they'll raise some bobwhites and then release them to the wild. But this far north, they don't do well. They don't last long. And it sounds like that may have been the case. And the bird might have been imprinted. That is, it recognizes people as some sort of a caretaker. And that may be why it was so close to where your husband was hurrying to get out. And it's unfortunate, but it's just cruel for those birds to release them into this environment. They just it's not natural for them, and it's something that the state has been trying for years and years to release them, and they learned a long time ago, 40 years ago, don't do this anymore. It doesn't work.
Maura, thank you very much for the call. Rich Guthrie is our guest today on Vox Pop. The number is 800-348-2551. Joan in Albany. Hello, Joan in Albany.
Hello, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Can you hear me?
Sure thing.
Hi. I have another woodpecker question, and I'm not sure that I heard you talking with the other woman about putting out suet, and I'm not sure that that would help because I tried putting it out and the squirrels just, you know, took it down immediately.
Yeah.
It was not something I could. I've got some pretty lusty squirrels in my backyard. They chow down the feeder as well.
Nice.
So I've got this little woodpecker that's been hitting my house. I had to put a piece of metal tape over the hole. He put a hole that was about an inch and a half wide, and by the time I got a chance to call pest control, but all they could do, you know, that I've certainly, they told me it could be, I have to keep treating for termites, but it could be a presence of termites. And that's originally what they told me when I first had a woodpecker problem. So I haven't had too much trouble since I've had pest control, but now suddenly they're the little gray ones like you were the other person was describing.
Mm-hmm.
So how do I discourage them? Do you know?
Well,
I mean, I'm
again,
sorry that this is about promoting birds, but
no, that's fine.
How do I discourage them without killing?
Well, again, it's about the food. It sounds like there is some sort of food source that they're interested in. And while it may not be termites, it could also be carpenter bees or the like. Is this currently happening, or is it was something during the summer?
No, it's happening lately. You know, and a week or so ago, I had the pest control people come out, meerkat, and take a look. But all they did was close up the hole with metal tape, and you know, they've been treating the house otherwise. They've been treating it.
Yeah.
Well,
so I don't know what else to do.
Well, unfortunately, there's not much you can do. If they're interested in the food, then it's the food that's bringing them back. And I don't know.
I've got cedar shakes. You think that's definitely what it is then, right?
Well, that would be at this time of year. They're not interested in making a nest hole, that's for sure. Not in October. So, you know, the other possibilities, nor are they interested in drumming, sounding their drumming noise to mark their territory. So the three causes will be why woodpeckers bang on wood, food, housing, and territory. So they don't do it for drill. So there's something motivating them, and that's what you got to boil it down to and approach it from that direction.
Joan, thank you very much for the call. And bonus points for the phrase lusty squirrels. I've never heard that one before, but we're going to write it down. We're going to use it in general conversation. Jeffrey and Hobart. Jeffrey, you're on.
Yes, I'm glad you were talking about the northern harriers because I have a male and a female here right now.
Cool.
And me and my buddy are like, holy crap, what is that? And then I was able to identify them mainly by the white rump as they're flying away. And I've never seen them here before, so I thought that was very cool. And I'm in an area where I'm close to Oneonta and Franklin Mountain, which is a major flight line for raptors, eagles, whatnot. So, you know, that was kind of cool. And then last year we had a albino red-tail hawk here, which, yeah, and actually had New York State Conference. Matt, people come in here taking pictures of it. I guess there was only three white, you know, couples in New York State. Any idea on that or...
Okay, Rich.
Yeah, well, that's very good. The you might be interested in being in touch with the Delaware Otsego Audubon Society out your neck of the woods for additional information. And I'm glad you brought up Franklin Mountain. I'll mention that a little bit more as we go along. And as far as the white red tails are concerned, well, there are more than three in the state, that's for sure. But it is an unusual. There are a few of them. It's a very interesting genetic phenomenon that we have with that population of white red tails.
Cool.
So good for you, and be in touch with the folks at Franklin Mountain about these birds. The harrier is for sure, and the red tail, I'm sure they'd be. And the red tail may still be around. The white red tails tend not to migrate.
Okay. Well, definitely.
Yeah, no, he's been around for the last couple of years. Yeah.
Well, there you go then.
All right. Well, yeah, thanks a lot for the call, Jeffrey. We appreciate it very much. Rich Guthrie is our guest. Remember when our producer said, try not to be, you know, terrible? Well, I'm failing, Rich.
Okay. Well, we'll see if we can bail you out
here. Can you prop up the show? Let's go to Sam in Sharon, Connecticut. Sam.
How are you?
Hey.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Yeah. Oh, I'm doing excellent. Thank you so much. It's one of my favorite shows on the planet. And these days, any distraction I can get, I'm all on it. Thank you, Rich. I love it. I was out at my crabapple tree the other day, which is just dripping crabapples. And these little tiny birds, they kind of like a wren, you know, not the yellow goldfinches or any, but smaller than that, a little round with a small head but a sharp beak, and they were having a field day on those crab apples. So could you identify that, and then could you speak to the other songbirds that are coming through the area right now, please? Thank you so much.
You got it.
You're quite welcome, and yeah, good to go. That little bird that you're seeing, it sounds like a good description of the pine siskin, which is in many respects looks like a goldfinch, both in size and shape. Except it has a thinner bill and a whole different bunch of color. It's a plain brown bird with brown stripes on it, and gold. The males have a little bit of golden color in the wings, and those are coming through again. It seems like they're building up for a mass incursion through the winter months, and so stand by. I know the reports are coming in with some places. Some folks are seeing them by the hundreds already. And that's what happens with siskins and redpolls when they have one of these incursion years, eruption years.
No.
So stand by. They'll be around. And the other songbirds that are coming through now, well, the thing is most of the insect-eating, the bug-eating birds are gone. They're out of here. They're well on their way to South America for the winter. Then the northern birds, well, those are the finches and the sparrows, and they're working their way into the area. This is kind of like a peak time for different kinds of sparrows, the white-throated sparrow, the white-crowned sparrow, the junco, vesper sparrow, and the like, the whole myriad of different sparrows. Hard to tell apart, but it's challenging and a lot of fun and a great accomplishment when you can go out there and find six or eight different species of sparrows. Good job.
All right, let's go and grab one more here before the next break, and then we'll be back and run down your list of current events and things going on in the bird world. We go to Doug in South Egremont. Doug.
Well, hello, Rich. Hello, Ray. Hello. Thank God I've got the patience. I've been waiting here about 40 minutes, and I've been waiting about a year to ask you this question.
Go, man, go.
I live in Western Massachusetts, in Egremont, Massachusetts, and had a pair of barn owls show up this year. And I've got a question about their call. They sound like a rusty hinge, as I'm sure you know. And yet they start shortly after dusk and continue with this call all the way through until shortly before dawn. And I'm wondering, who are they calling and why are they calling? Because they wake me up virtually every single night.
You are a lucky man. You're one of the very few that can talk about having barn owls. This is the place where horses live, owls, as opposed to the barred owl, not the smart rider owl, but the barred owl, which is a bird of the woods. The barn owl is very, very rare in our area. We're kind of like in an extreme corner of their distribution. And they are one of our most nocturnal birds, strictly nighttime. Well, never say strictly anything, but mostly always ever nighttime. They're calling, and you got that sound pretty much good down right there. You got that right. It's kind of like a harsh, whispery, ghost-like screech or scream or
exactly.
Scowl.
Exactly.
I like to think that this is where ghost stories come from, because the barn owl likes to nest in belfries of churches, which is oftentimes surrounded by a cemetery. and on a foggy winter night, taking a shortcut through the cemetery may upset a few barn owls and have that ghost-like creature fly silently over your head, screaming in your left ear. We'll send you straight to off the drink, that's for sure.
Okay. All right, anything else,
right.
Doug?
Where I am, they're pine woods, and I know quite often, not that they're necessarily roosting, but one of them actually sometimes is probably within 100 yards of the house. But then we've got a bunch of haylots, and I know they're out there hunting. But what is the purpose of this call? Because I would think if I were a mouse in a bowl, I heard them with their kind of rusty, screechy, ghostly sound, as you say, I wouldn't poke my head out of my hole.
Mice aren't that smart.
What is the call all about?
Well, it's about I'm hungry. You may have a family group there, and they're calling back and forth because they're hungry. They want to get fed. And I think it's a propensity. It's a right of a barn owl to say what he wants when he wants to. And they tend to do okay. that. Anytime they leave a perch, it seems like they got to talk about it.
All right,
in
listen,
their own way.
Doug, I appreciate right. your patience. We do have to take a break here, so we'll have to cut it off. Thank you for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. Rich Guthrie is here, and we'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is our guest. And before we get to the email bag hit here, Rich, what do you have on your list of events?
Well, I'm glad that I believe it was Doug that brought up the Franklin Mountain. This is approaching the next peak in hawk migration. Yeah. And the hawk watch stations, such as Franklin Mountain down near Oneonta, New York, are primary is to look for the golden eagle between the end of October and the end of November. Prime time for golden eagles and the other red-tailed hawks and other migrant hawks and eagles and the like. The other ones are Chestnut Ridge down by Bedford, New York, Hook Mountain downstate in New York, Putney Mountain in Vermont, and Booth Hill in Connecticut, where the Hartford Audubon Society has weekend hawk watching opportunities. Also, hummingbirds, keep the feeders up. There are still a few that are mingling around and will be most happy to find a hummingbird feeder. And if you do have a hummingbird at this time, do let me know. I'll get you my email address there, get your pens and pencils ready.
Ready.
And now this is also the time where some very unusual birds will show up. And I like to draw attention to a bird that is normally found in Argentina that spends its winter in Brazil, that turned up, and once again, another rare bird for Ashokan Reservoir in Ulster County, New York. And one of our listener fans, Cedric, sent me an email. He found this bird down at Ashokan Reservoir. Cedric contacted me, and we got the word out there, and lots of people showed up to see a fork-tailed flycatcher, a magnificent bird. You could look it up and see what it looks like. It's related to our kingbird, but it has a magnificent long tail. Mm. It's almost like a bird of paradise on the wing.
Oh, cool.
And I got down there on the next day and met up with Cedric and his lovely wife and his remarkable four-year-old son, champion bicycle rider kid at that age.
Wow.
He was great.
That's great.
And We all had a nice get together. A lot of other Vox Pop listeners that walked that pedestrian, that little promenade down at Ashokan Reservoir, enjoying a great October day.
You're kidding me.
And now is the time to get out there and enjoy these things. A lot of the bird clubs have programs going on outdoors. The Waterman Bird Club tomorrow will be going to Time Moor Forest. That's in Dutchess County, New York, watermanbirdclub.org. And then next week on Wednesday, they'll be going to the Vanderbilt Mansion. And then a week beyond that, Bowdoin Park in Dutchess County. And then again down in Thompson Pond in Dutchess County, watermanbirdclub.org.
Yep.
The Mass Audubon Society will be doing their Friday morning bird walks at the Broad Meadow Brook Sanctuary in Worcester, Massachusetts. That's this coming Friday. Contact massaudubon.org to find out about that. And one other thing for the closed-in winter months that may be coming up, the various bird feeder cams that are out there, all about birds, a site at Cornell University's Lab of Ornithology, has this wonderful menu, this wonderful travelogue of bird feeders that you can actually click on and watch the birds coming and going. This morning, I was entertained by a bird feeder in Panama watching one of our bird species, a red-breasted nuthatch, coming and going at a bird feeder in Panama. You can watch a hummingbird feeder in Texas, an osprey nest platform. The ospreys are gone, but a lot of other birds are showing up on it in Savannah, Georgia. Great entertainment, good computer screen, busy work to do,
yeah,
and the like. So lots of good stuff happening out there. And virtual programs as well. Just mentioning one here. See if I bring it up here on the screen. And that is November 2nd at 6:30 via Zoom, Hudson Mohawk Bird Club will be doing a program on sprucing the Adirondacks, managing populations of the endangered spruce grouse. Go to hmbc.net to find out about that. And you might check the correct date. I may have, I'm pretty sure it's November 2nd, but that's a little further down the road in time to find out.
All right. We have, oh, by the way, if people want to get in touch with you, Rich, what's the email address?
The email address for hummingbirds and other rare birds is richardpguthrie@gmail.com. richardpguthrie@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. P as in Peter. And, yeah, any of those rare birds that show up at the bird feeder, hummingbirds, and then general questions.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to, and if you sent one in and it somehow got buried in the email inbox, try again if I didn't get back to you.
I'm so glad you mentioned that because we have a stack of email here. I can only do two or three, and then we have to get back to the phones. This one is from Jim in Colony. And Jim says, we have a very small puppy, 7 pounds. When we have had him out in the yard on Saturday, there was a hawk circling very high over our yard. Could it have been looking at our puppy?
Nah.
No?
Nah. Nah. A puppy, even for our large hawks, will be too large. And the only one that might even be interested in, would be a great horned owl in the evening, or at nighttime. So I would be a little cautious about that. If you any chance you're in an area where there may be great horned owls. But aside from that, the other ones are more interested in smaller things like mice tidbits and the like.
This one is from Anonymous. Anonymous writes, the bluebirds have been gone for 6 weeks. Now are back. Where'd they go? Where are they going?
They haven't gone anywhere. They're just wandering around the neighborhood. And if they like it there, they'll continue to return. A bluebird nest box house right now might be a welcome homecoming for them. You might want to open it up and kick out any mice that have moved in, boarders and hoarders, and show them the door and leave it available for the bluebirds to come back.
This one is from Will in Kingston. Where are all the snowy owls in New York State? This is not a joke. I'd like to see one in the wild someday and wondering where and when I might be more likely to see them. And that's from Will in Kingston.
Well, as the man says, stay tuned. They're at the doorstep. The snowy owl, beautiful big white owl that comes down in the winter and like open fields, like the Washington County grasslands or the Shawangunk grasslands, or down along the coastal areas. They like the dunes of the coast because it reminds them of the tundra. There is actually a couple of them at Syracuse Airport right now.
Really?
And some of the other open areas like airports, golf courses and the like could attract them. But it's a little early for them. It's only October. They usually wait until December, January to show up.
Mm. I've been informed by our producer that Harry Potter's owl is a snowy owl.
Yes, that's correct. That's the guy.
I'm underwhelmed by that information. All right, last email here, and then we'll move back to the phones. This one's from Greg. And Greg's subject heading is Wren impersonations. I was working outside, driving screws with an impact driver, and a wren began imitating the sound of my power tool. Is that possible?
Sure. The Carolina wren, which is, as the name suggests, is a bird of the South that has recently moved, expanded its range up into our listening area. And, yeah, they call them down South. I've heard them called mocker wren, as in mockingbird. The Carolina wren does imitate sounds, not as good as the mockingbird, but they have a little repertoire of their own. Mocker wren, Carolina wren. Yep.
Rich, I don't know
how well they do an air hammer, but never tried it.
Fair enough. The number is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie, let's move as quickly as we can through these calls. Again, the lines are flying off the hook here, and we'll do as best we can. Paula in Olive Bridge. Paula.
Hi, Ray.
Hi.
And hi, Rich. Actually, the previous caller kind of asked my question about the puppy, except that I was going to ask about a kitten. I live up in the foothills of the Catskills in Olive Bridge, and I've always had indoor-outdoor cats. Is that a concern up in my area?
Yes. And not only for the owls and the hawks. Well, first of all, a cat is a tad smaller than a lot of the puppies out there, so it might overlap into the fair game range of a larger hawk, such as a red-tailed hawk or the like. And as usual, I'm going to suggest that the best place for a cat, safety's sake, will be inside the doors.
Mm.
Yeah. I expected you to say that.
Yes. Didn't we all,
you do
Paula?
Eat a lot of birds.
Right. Well, I mean,
yeah,
Rich could...
I have to balance...
Go ahead,
my
Paula.
My two loves.
Yeah, I hear you.
So I just wanted to clarify, when the cat is a kitten, they're most vulnerable, or are they still vulnerable as adults?
Well, yeah, even to a normal-sized cat. You get into Maine Coon cat or the like, probably a little over the edge. But a normal-sized cat, probably, I hate to put it this way, is fair game, though.
You know, Paula, I remember seeing... The kids were quite small, and all the kids in the neighborhood were out front playing on our street. And it was about dusk, and all of a sudden, over a neighbor's house, a huge owl came with a rabbit. It was holding, I mean, I don't even know how it got off the ground with this thing. So, I'd watch out for the kitties. Thanks a lot for the call. Rich Guthrie, our guest, and let's go to Marla in Falls Village, Connecticut. Marla, you're on.
Hi, boys.
Hi.
I've become disabled, and I can't put the bird feeders outside. Mm. Is there some gizmo, like a paintball gun, I can use to shoot the bird seed out into the yard?
Genius. You can try. A slingshot might do it. In fact, anglers in Europe use slingshot to throw bait out into the canal to lure the fish in. And occasionally have one of their little corn kernels with a hook on it. So, yeah. Try that. See if you can get the extended range at slingshots.
Marla, I love that idea. I think you shouldn't have told us this on the radio. You should patent that idea and then get back to us with it, because I think you make some money on that.
I didn't say a word.
Well, thanks a lot for the call.
That'll be our secret.
We go over to Nancy in Rhinebeck. Hello, Nancy.
Hello. How are you?
I am well. You're on a speakerphone, are you not?
I love this program. It's one of my favorites.
Oh,
I'm
thanks.
A birder. Hey, here's my big question. I've lived here for a little over a year in a lovely condominium in Rhinebeck overlooking a pond. I've counted about, since I've been here, on and off, 100 Canada geese or so, a lovely flock that I love to watch, swimming on the pond and having fun on the pond. However, my big question is, do they migrate or do they not migrate? The reason I ask is because last winter, I noticed a few of them sliding around on the ice. Not that they were ice skating, but it looked like they were playing on the ice. So, big question for Rich. Do they migrate or not?
The answer is yes and no. Some do, some don't. The Canada geese, a lot of them have learned that it's not worth all the trouble to get out of town because there's plenty of food around now that things have warmed up a little bit. They like manicured lawns. They like kept ponds. They like golf courses and the like. So they've just sort of given up the idea of going all the way down to North Carolina for the winter and going all the way up to Canada for the summer. They just stay put. That's why we have so many of them, because they are.
Yeah, and my next question is, as a retired kindergarten teacher, I hope I wasn't teaching misinformation. I told my children that ducks and geese migrate because they can't get fish out of the frozen ponds in the winter. But
yeah,
I guess,
well, look, that would be true. There are some fish-eating ducks that do have to get out, move away. But the geese eat grain and grass and the like, so they don't need to worry about frozen ponds so much. They like open water. They need open water. They'll find that any place, the Connecticut River, the larger reservoirs, the Hudson River, Long Island Sound, and they can travel a long way between lunch and dinner.
All right, Nancy, thanks a lot. We only have about 80 seconds left here. Let's go to Elizabeth in Beacon. Hello, Elizabeth.
Oh, hi. I saw two lovely mockingbirds on my driveway. They kept about 5 feet apart. They kept hopping about and hopping towards each other and back from each other, and it went on and on and on, and then one jumped up on a post and the other one jumped up on a higher one. And I didn't know if this was late courtship or it all seems out of season. What could were they playing or what were they doing?
It could have been a standoff. Once the nestlings get out of the nest, they have to decide who's going to stay here and who's going to have to move. Winter's coming, and they need to spread out their own territory. So it's not courtship. This is all about winter territory, perhaps.
Well, thank you. It was adorable to watch, but I hope they settled it. Thanks very much.
Will.
I love your program.
Thanks, Elizabeth.
Well, thank you.
All right, Rich, we only have a minute or two, actually less than a minute. Somebody wrote in earlier and wanted to know if you're doing another episode of Birdcast soon.
Well, there is Birdcast number 3 is out there. It's on YouTube. You can find Birdcast Slant CC. As in Charlie, yes.
Ah.
Birdcast Slant CC, and you'll see episodes 1, 2, and the most recent number 3 available.
And that's with our buddy Jason Goff, huh?
This is true. Jason and I and the rest of the crew.
Are you getting along with Jason? Because, you know, he can be a little tough to work with, right?
Oh, I think that's only with you.
Oh, you make a point. All right, Rich. Well, I'm going to dispatch you from the program now. Thank you, sir. We'll see you next time.
Okay, then, Ray. Thank you.
Support comes from College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts. For over 30 years, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair and 24-hour towing. Full-service gas includes checking of fluids, tire pressure, and window washing. CollegeStreetMotors.com. Chester Common Table. Try it again. Chester Common Table, Main Street, Chester, Massachusetts. Locally sourced comfort food, wine, and cocktails. Offering socially distant dining indoors and out Thursday through Sunday from 4 to 9 p.m. ChesterCommonTable.com. The Arkell Museum at Canajoharie presenting Winslow Homer Illustrator. Featuring the Arkell Museum collection of Homer watercolors and woodcuts through December 30th. ArkellMuseum.org. And Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany. Dr. Tom Denham providing individual career guidance, career testing, job strategies, interview preparation, LinkedIn lessons, resume and cover letter writing, accepting new clients, careers in transition, LLC.com. Once again, thanks to the great Rich Guthrie for being with us today. Thank you for listening. I apologize to all those emailers, all those callers who didn't get through. Rich will be back again soon. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Phones answered by Matt Plummer. Our producer is Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's Tony Yang at Mark Bogosian. They'll be on the line to answer all your computer and or smartphone questions. That's tomorrow at 2. Right now, stand by for the book show.